Should a church be prepared to defend itself in the case of a terrorist attack? If so, what steps should it take, and what is the biblical precedent for self-defense? Hello, I'm your host, Sam Rohr, and we're talking about what you and your pastor need to know about how to respond to the dangers facing not only our nation, but also our churches.
Welcome to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review, featuring the best segments taken from our Stand in the Gap Today daily program. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth. Stand by to hear a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. The pastor's and the believer's goal should be to impact our culture for Christ. As part of our mission to urge pastors to boldly preach the whole counsel of God and equip people to be soldiers and ambassadors for Christ, we're establishing APN chapters in all 50 states. Learn more on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Now, here's our host and American Pastors Network President, Sam Rohr.
Welcome to Stand in the Gap Weekend. Today's program will be packed with a wealth of information, so you might want to grab a pen and some paper in order to take notes. Just last Sunday, on New Year's Day, we heard on the news that there had been another terrorist attack in Istanbul, Turkey. ISIS eventually claimed responsibility for the violence and, according to the New York Times, stated that there would be, quote, continued aggressive efforts to conduct attacks throughout Turkey, end quote, in areas where American citizens and expatriates lived or visited. This week before Christmas, our friends from UnderstandingTheThreat.com issued a warning that Islamic jihadists were calling for targeted attacks on Christian churches in America. It's clear that terrorist threats are on the rise. And during today's program, we're going to address these threats to the church by featuring segments taken from our daily Stand in the Gap radio broadcast, which originally aired on December the 21st. Our guest on this program is Leo Homan. He's the news editor with WorldNet Daily and author of the new book entitled Stealth Invasion. Joining me will be Dr. Gary Dahl and David Kistler, our regular co-host.
Well, are Islamic terrorists now unleashing their promised worldwide jihad? First, the murder of the Russian ambassador to Turkey, then 12 people, as you know, were killed in Berlin by another Islamic jihadist. Then, just released, serious threats now to churches in the United States, all by Islamic jihadists, and all coming forth, it seems, within just a matter of a couple of days. So to help us better understand these specific terrorist actions, these new threats, we're going to talk with a new guest to Stand in the Gap today. He's an authority on Islamic terrorist action in Islam generally, in the Muslim Brotherhood. He is an author, the author of a new book being released here in January entitled Stealth Invasion. His name is Leo Homan. He is news editor of WorldNet Daily, and he is an investigative supporter of a reporter of a long time. And with that, I'm going to introduce myself, Sam Rohr, and welcome you, our listeners, to Stand in a Gap today. And I'll be joined today by David Kistler and Gary Dahl. All of us will be here on the program today. This topic certainly demands that, we believe. And because of the importance of today's program and the updates that we want to bring to you, we're going to get right into the substance of what well could be a promised unleashing of threatened worldwide terror attacks by Islamic jihadists. We cover this topic a great deal on this program. We do it intentionally, ladies and gentlemen, because we believe, as you've heard from many of our guests and ourselves, we believe that this Islamic terrorist threat is the number one threat facing our nation from a human and physical perspective. And we're going to talk about a number of things as we get into this. But with that being said, I want to welcome now to Stand in the Gap today, Leo Homan. He is the news editor for WorldNet Daily, an investigative reporter, an Islamic and Muslim Brotherhood expert. Leo, welcome to Stand in the Gap today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Sam. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're glad that you're here, Leo, and it was my privilege some time ago to have done an interview with you on your you write regularly for WorldNet Daily, and that's when I got to know you a little bit and really felt inclined to have you on this program, particularly with the fact that you do have a new book coming out that you have titled Stealth Invasion, where you speak to the tactics of Islamic jihadists, how they invade a country, and how they're invading our country and other countries in the world. But I know the book is filled with a whole lot more of must-read information. So let me get right into it and ask you the first question here. Why did you write this book, and who is the intended audience for it? So I want you to get right into the whys and the wherefores of this book. Why did you feel it's so important to write it?
Sam, I started writing about 2.5 years ago about immigration issues for WorldNet Daily, and I started off, you know, reporting about what was happening at the southern border. At that time, it was the summer of 2014, and as you remember, we were having a huge crisis at the border, and thousands of Central Americans, you know, mostly young people from Central America, were showing up at the border uninvited, or some might say invited, and it was a catch-and-release type of a program, basically, and that was huge in the news during that summer and fall of 2014. Well, as I was covering that issue, I started getting some comments from readers saying, you know, this is a huge problem, but you might want to check into this other aspect of immigration that gets so little attention, and it's basically legal immigration. And that, as you know, Sam, is a sacred cow in this country, legal immigration. We're a nation of immigrants. We always have been from the very beginning. And so you don't see very much critical reporting going on from journalists in this country about the various dynamics of our legal immigration system. But as I started poking around in it, I found that we have been in about a 30-year stretch here or more, 40, 50 years actually, of unprecedented growth in legal immigration. And we're to the point now where we're allowing in 1.3 million people per year on green cards, which, as you know, a green card gives a permanent residence status to the immigrant, affords just about every single right of a full citizen other than voting rights. And as I looked even further into these green cards, I discovered the refugee resettlement program as a sort of subset of people coming in legally from dangerous parts of the world. And then I found that this was one of the fastest growing segments of this exploding immigration system, where we were bringing in people from Iraq, Afghanistan, Sudan, Somalia, now Syria, and it was just sort of growing out of control. And and then I discovered that there was a whole industry that was really profiting off of this, and some of them were even involved with church groups. And, you know, you have the Catholic Church, the Lutheran Church, the Episcopalians, the evangelical Christian community, all participating in this, what I call stealth, and learned was actually a stealth invasion. If you're bringing in people from a hostile country who don't wish to assimilate, that's not the type of immigration that this country was built upon. My ancestors came here, you know, Catholics from Germany and Italy, and they fully adopted this country as their own and the values that it represents, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the whole shebang. But that's not what we see happening with this particular subset.
Leo, let me ask you a question. You are probably very familiar with Frank Gaffney of the Center for Security Policy. He laid out a three-step approach that the jihadists take within a host country. The first step is the accommodation stage. You know, you're okay, we're okay, we get along. Stage two, the agitation stage. They begin agitating for their rights. They begin running for public office, all of these kind of things. And then the third stage is the subjugation stage. You say in your book that the jihadist infiltration in the United States has been underway for approximately 30 years. If that's so, then where would you say that we are on their timetable for creating an uprising or a takeover within the United States of America?
I believe we're squarely within that second stage of agitation. You see it going on with care the Council for American Islamic Relations, which is a offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. They are agitating at every level: education, military and police, law enforcement, and in the church and the synagogues. Those are the three levels that they target as being forming the sort of foundation of this country. You infiltrate and you influence those three levels of government, military, law enforcement, and the religious sector and the education sector, and you cover it all. And that's what we've been seeing. You know, we've seen the agitation.
Leo Homan, thanks for being with us here today. Ladies and gentlemen, stay tuned because this is just the beginning here. After this break, we're going to come back. We're going to continue on this theme, but we're going to shift. We're going to shift a little bit to what's happened over now on the Europe side of the equation with what happened in Germany, what happened with the Russian ambassador in Turkey. And we're going to ask the question to Leo because he's made the statement that we're in the middle of World War III. I want to ask him where we are and tie these pieces together.
We've been talking about the level of threat from Islamic terrorism in the United States, and if you've just joined us, today's broadcast features an interview we conducted with Leo Homan, news editor with WorldNet Daily. We're going to move into our next segment and think globally as we consider how Germany, Russia, the UK, and other countries under recent terrorist threats are reacting to the immigration crisis and the newly announced aggression on the part of ISIS terrorists. Also, we'll consider how our own President-elect Donald Trump will handle these issues once he takes the presidency.
On today's Stand in the Gap, today we are looking at this Islamic terrorist circumstance that has risen. We've seen it both now in Turkey with the Russian ambassador. We've seen it in Berlin, Germany, with the attack there. And now there's been some other ones. I think was in China that something just happened in a market there. There are a lot of things taking place, and we're trying to tie these elements together. And to help us do that, an expert on this whole area is Leo Homan. He is the news editor for WorldNet Daily. He's a investigative journalist, and he has a new book that is coming out entitled Stealth Invasion. Before we're done, Leo, I'm going to want you to tell people where they can expect to find that book. But with that being said, let me set this thing up here, this first question for you. The circumstance here in Germany, in Europe, it appears that the people themselves, the citizens themselves, appear to be waking up, whether they are in France or Germany or England, as to the reality of the Islamic invasion there that's occurring in Europe. But it does not seem that the political elite are. They're almost having to be drug into this circumstance. And there, even in Germany, Angela Merkel, she's in trouble with the people now, and frankly, in my own opinion, she may not survive politically, but she still appears to be fairly in denial. Now, that sets it up for this question I have for you here, Leo Homan, and that is this: will the political globalist elite across Europe begin to wake up and push back against Islamic aggression, or will they perhaps as likely use this developing uprising to more likely perhaps look for some kind of a diversionary tactic, such as perhaps war with Russia, which we all know seems to be brewing and in the winds. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you could.
Yeah, this same political elite that you refer to in Germany and in Europe is the exact same elitist political class that has been in power here in the United States for the last several decades. And just to finish up my point, it from before the break, and it really does tie into your current question, the Muslim Brotherhood was invited into the White House in 1996 by First Lady Hillary Clinton. That was the first incident of a Ramadan iftar dinner in which she invited elements of the Muslim Brotherhood into the White House to celebrate this Muslim holy day. Every president since then has followed suit and kept that invitation alive and has invited the Brotherhood into the White House to celebrate Ramadan, and has also, as we know, invited them into various agencies of our government to actually help in the decision-making of how to run our government. And so with Donald Trump, you saw the first possible breakthrough where this chain of events that started in 1996 has been broken here in the United States. It totally flabbergasted all of the experts, all the political pundits. And so my answer to your question is, will the political elite, you know, sort of wake up and take on Islam, or at least name it? And they're afraid to even name the enemy, which, of course, Donald Trump has done. And this just outrages them. They will double down. They will never admit defeat, and they will come back 10 times stronger if they're allowed. And I assume it's going to, they may, you know, pull back a couple of steps and try to, like Angela Merkel has done, to sort of backtrack a little bit and say, no, we made a bit of a mistake. We don't want to allow any big mass invasion of mass migration of Middle Easterners into our country again, which she has said. She's even talked about banning the burqa in Germany. But this is just short-term appeasement of the populist wind that is blowing through Germany. They will never give up the agenda, which I believe is destruction of Christianity.
That's a strong statement, Leo, and I think that our listeners need to understand that. They are never, never going to give up the agenda, which is the destruction of Christianity. Though, going on here a little bit, you know, the recent murder of the Russian ambassador has caused Vladimir Putin to swear a total annihilation of ISIS. But also, this may bring Russia into the conflict with Turkey. Now, Turkey last night launched numerous F-16s as a warning to Russia, basically to mind their own business, I would guess. The globalists in Europe need Turkey and cannot afford for Turkey to open the gates to the hundreds of thousands of Islamic terrorists they're holding over there, which Erdogan has threatened to do. We talked about that recently on our program. So the question that I have for you, Leo, is Turkey seems to be holding an ace card here. In your experience and understanding, which direction do you think they will ultimately go? Will they stay with Europe, Europe's elite, or will they go with Russia, in your opinion?
That's a very good and tricky question. They are really playing both powers right now. Which side they will actually fall down on in the end is anybody's guess. But I would not myself be too quick to predict World War III with Russia breaking out. I don't see it happening. If Hillary Clinton had won the election, yes, I could see things degrading to that point because she really was on a collision course with Russia. With Donald Trump, I think we see a president who will be looking at Russia as possibly more of a partner rather than an enemy. He will have America's interests first, Mr. Trump, which really, if you look at it, America does not have an interest in war with Russia. Why should it? Russia is not a communist country like it used to be, yet we see this sort of agitation on the part of Democrats, you know, which is, to me, ironic, to sort of reignite the Cold War between America and Russia. And yes, we have Turkey sort of in the middle, and we have to watch them, and that is a vital, vital part of the world just because of where it is positioned. It is going hardline Islamic, as you know, with Erdogan and the crackdown going on there. Not only did we have a jihadist attack, but we also recently have had a Christian pastor, an American Christian pastor from North Carolina who's been a missionary in Turkey for like 23 years, arrested by Erdogan, thrown in prison on trumped-up charges, and we haven't heard a word yet from Mr. Obama. He's been completely silent. He's called Erdogan one of his best friends as far as international leaders, and he's not said one word to him, you know, as far as getting this pastor released from prison. So that is a place we really need to keep our eye on because it could flip either way, as you say, to Russia or to the West. But I think it's going to be continuing in the realm with the West. That, however, was going to cause a lot of tension between America because Trump now is not sold on the same agenda as Mr. Obama.
Leo, I want to say thank you so much for the warning you're issuing today. In fact, I follow your WorldNet Daily pieces that you write, and you are sounding an alarm, and a very appropriate alarm that we have been trying to sound on this program with respect to the Islamic threat. And you said we have a current president and administration who won't even label the enemy, won't call it what it is. The phrase we've used on here is you'll never defeat what you're unwilling to accurately define. And this administration is not willing to accurately define our enemy. Now, here's my question. Knowing that there are millions of Muslims that have infiltrated Europe and the United States with tens of thousands of trained Islamic jihadists, is it too late for Europe to avoid a bloody conflict with Islam? And perhaps more importantly for us here on this side of the pond, is it too late for America to avoid such a conflict?
I don't think it's too late for America. It's getting very close to that point for Europe, because Europe does not seem to have the political will. We will be watching the elections in Germany and France and some of these countries to see who they elect. But unless they elect a Donald Trump-type politician who knows who the enemy is and has the political will to confront the enemy, I see it being too late for Europe. But look at Russia as an example. 18 to 20% of Russia's population is Islamic. You don't see terrorist attacks going on in Russia. You know, you don't see Putin kowtowing to the imams. You know, they're required to be Russians, and they know that. We can deal the same way here in America. Yeah, you have freedom of religion in this country. You're free to be Islamic if you want to be. But you have to be an American. You cannot come in here with seditious anti-American values and expect to be accommodated and kowtowed to.
Powerful comment, Leo. Thank you. Excellent.
Really, Leo, so really what you're saying is that in Russia, Putin does not permit the implementation of Sharia law because it's Sharia that really directly competes with the system of law. Would you agree with that?
I would 100% agree with that. What we've done in Europe and now in America is we've set up a competing system where we've imported a large number of people from these hostile areas of the world, and we have allowed them to live in enclaves, and we've allowed them to form their own identities and have even a separate form of law in some cases. I mean, it's amazing. You just can't allow that.
Leo Homan, WorldNet Daily News Editor. This information is extremely good. We appreciate it. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to come back after the break. We're going to take our discussion with Leo and move now into the most recent threat warning that has come forth relative to Islamic jihadists here in America targeting churches in America. We want you to know this. We're going to talk with Leo about what this is and how they are actually penetrating and seeking out churches in the United States. We're going to talk about that when we come back right after these important announcements.
We're glad you're listening to today's Stand in the Gap Weekend. Did you know that the American Pastors Network produces not only Stand in the Gap Today and Stand in the Gap Weekend, but also a one-minute program carried on over 200 stations nationwide called Stand in the Gap Minute? Here's the program from last week. I hope that you enjoy this important challenge. Our theme for this first month of 2017 is New Beginnings. Genesis chapter 1 says, "In the beginning God created." You see, there's nothing in this world, people or things, that God did not create for His glory. Hello, I'm Sam Rohrer with another timely Stand in the Gap Minute. Physical life and above all spiritual life in Christ were all created by Him. While all creation was made for us to enjoy, it was also made to remind us of the majesty and the power of God. The Bible tells us that all creation sings His praise. Are you? Singing praise to God starts with recognizing Him as God, then knowing Him personally as God through Jesus Christ. If you don't know Him, you can. Let this be the year we praise the name of Jesus Christ as Creator and Redeemer. The American Pastors Network, pastors preaching the truth, equipping people to impact the culture for Christ. Visit us at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net to find out how you can help. We'll be right back with more of today's program. But if you just tuned in, we've been airing a broadcast from our daily program called Stand in the Gap Today. If you like what you're hearing, you can tune in daily by visiting our website at standinthegapradio.com and listening online or finding a station in your area on our station's listing page. Now, as we continue with our broadcast, we're going to shift now to the local level and discuss the threat of terrorist attacks on our churches here in America. Is there a legitimate threat to churches? And if so, how should we respond as Christians, and what are some practical steps to ensure the safety of our local congregations? Now, you might hear some things in this discussion that you've never thought of, perhaps some information that you'd like to share with your pastor. Our programs are always archived on the website at standinthegapradio.com. We'd love for you to visit our site and to leave us your question and your comments. Now let's go back to our discussion with Leo Homan about how your church can be prepared in the event of a terrorist attack.
In this segment, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to move into a recent threat warning that was just released by Understanding the Threat. Now, this is an entity that we have had on this program. We've had John Guandalo and Chris Gobbets on this program. They are with UTT, Understanding the Threat, both involved with FBI involvement ahead of time in their past life and now involved in training. They issued an alert, and I'm going to read just a little bit of it, and I'm going to go to Leo to fill in some of the background behind it. The title of this was Muslims Targeting U.S. Churches. Now we're moving from Europe, ladies and gentlemen, to the United States. Muslims Targeting U.S. Churches. Just a little bit from what they put out. Quote, in the shadow of the savage killing of a priest by Muslims during Mass in Normandy, France in July of 2016, and the bombing of St. Peter and St. Paul Chapel, a part of St. Mark's Coptic Church in Cairo, Egypt, 4 weeks ago, Understanding the Threat has received reports in the last several weeks from law enforcement, from pastors, and from citizens revealing that Muslims are conducting, now get this, pre-operation surveillance inside U.S. churches during services. Now going on, this information has been passed to the appropriate law enforcement officials, and UTT, Understanding the Threat, is aware of a joint investigation between local police and the FBI in at least one of the cases. Now, Leo, I want to go to you now because I want you to take and fill in some of this. To make a statement that Muslims actually are targeting U.S. churches, and they've used this word pre-operation surveillance, it really raises a red flag. Explain to us just briefly, how is this pre-operation surveillance of U.S. churches occurring? And what should pastors and church leaders be looking for?
Well, essentially, you're going to have operatives enter your church, especially if it's a larger church. I don't think they're going to fool too much with smaller churches. If you are the pastor of a large church, a denominational church, a Catholic church, an Episcopal, a Lutheran, or a large Baptist church, these are going to be the most high-risk targets. And Muslim Brotherhood, when they make a splash like that, if they're going to make a splash like that, they're going to pick a high-profile target. And in fact, we've already had an example here in the United States that very few people are aware of this nature. It happened in Detroit, Michigan, earlier this summer, late August. There was a news story in the Detroit News, never made the national news, about a young man named Sebastian Gregerson who converted to Islam, and he was assembling a weapons arsenal of military-grade hardware. I mean, we're talking AK-47s, a howitzer, military knives that were of the type that are used by ISIS to behead people. He was assembling this arsenal, and he had planned to attack the largest Catholic church, I believe, in Detroit. They never named it in the article, but it was one of the largest in Detroit. And the FBI scoped this out and apparently sold him some weapons in an undercover sting and arrested him. The court records for this case were under a tight lid by the judge, but he, for some reason, he allowed these records to become public for one day. And the Detroit News got in there and did this article, and it showed that the FBI was concerned that this may just be one example of cases all over America in which jihadists are assembling weapons to attack churches whenever the word is given to them that now is the time to do it. And he was getting his money for this. He was getting money to buy these weapons from an imam in Maryland. So, yes, it's a real problem. If you're a large church and you see, a man who is unknown scoping out your church, sitting towards the back of the church during services, maybe taking a video or a picture, those should be red flags.
Hmm. You know, Leo, I was just going to ask you, how can such surveillance be detected? And, of course, you know, the larger the churches, the more difficult I think it would be to detect any surveillance, that is going on. And so I think that churches of every size, particularly churches that are very, very active in standing on biblical truth, and even those who have spoken against Islam or spoken the truth about Islam, all of those churches are churches, and all of those pastors are pastors and churches who need to be very, very much alerted to what you're talking about today. The question that I wanted to ask you, though, is how far in advance does such pre-operation surveillance occur before an attack actually takes place within a particular church? I mean, is it a 3-month period, a 1-month period, 6-month period? What does your investigation indicate?
I would say it's usually a matter of weeks, not days, not months.
Okay.
For an attack of this nature, yeah. I mean, at least from the time that the man would walk in and scope it out, yes. So, and they could have these plans, like I said, on the shelf if there is an active Islamic cell in your community. These plans could be actually laying there on the shelf just waiting for the word, to go ahead and implement them.
Well, do you think that in any particular way, though, that they might be able to bring in others within the community and with others within the church to be informants as to what is going on within those churches?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
All right. Is the surveillance that they conduct, is it just an outside surveillance or is it an inside job as well?
I would not be at all surprised if there could be some inside, but I would lean against it because they're not going to, they typically like to use the church, the Muslim Brotherhood loves to use the church and church leaders to do their bidding in a sort of public way, to chastise those of us who criticize Islam. But I don't think that they would be wanting to dirty their hands with an actual violent attack.
Leo, let me ask you this. Two questions. You said be on the lookout for a man that comes in, perhaps videoing, sitting in the back of an auditorium. My first question is this. Do you know of any instances, though we are seeing an uptick, an increase in women being involved in terror attacks, both outside and inside the United States of America, San Bernardino, California being one within the United States where a woman was involved? Are you aware of any women or the possibility of Muslim women being involved in surveilling U.S. churches? And then number two, we have two major events coming up within the next 30 to 45 days, Christmas being one of them. Christmas falls on a Sunday this year, which means churches are going to be filled. Does that concern you? And then, of course, we have the January 20 inauguration of Donald Trump, who is a huge threat to the Muslim Brotherhood. Do you see those two as specifically targeted events that the Muslim Brotherhood or Muslim entities are going to go after?
Well, we already know the inauguration is definitely being targeted for huge protests, and there's two wings of the protest. One is going to be a peaceful protest along the parade route, And then another wing of this protest, which is being funded by big money people like George Soros, you know, is looking like it's more radical and would and has the aim of actually trying to shut down the inauguration, you know, by clogging up and barring people through the not from entering the streets and whatnot, and blocking major thoroughfares in cities, not just in the in Washington D.C. but other cities as well on inauguration day. I've done some stories on this. Your other question, well, you also asked about churches on Christmas. The Islamic global Islamic movement always is very aware of symbolism and the power of symbolism, more so perhaps than we are. And so anytime there's a major Christian feast day, festival, you know, Christmas, Easter, sunrise service, Christmas service, yes, we should be on our guard, because and they look for soft targets, as we already spoke of. You know, a soft target on a highly symbolic Christian holy day, we should always be having our antenna up and our alert up to high levels. Now, but whether I have, you know, any information about a specific attack, no, I don't. The other question about women, that is an interesting question. We have seen women used in attacks here in the United States. I wrote about one that, again, received zero national attention, in which a Muslim refugee woman from Somalia attacked a woman and her daughter at their own home with their own flag, grabbed the flagpole off of the mailbox, came into the garage where the woman was having coffee with her daughter, and beat her with the flagpole and had until she was subdued by some neighbors who came to help. And she received almost no punishment from the Obama administration. There were no hate crimes filed, and she was simply charged with a misdemeanor.
Leo, I'm going to have to say goodbye in 15 seconds. Where should people go to find out more about you or your book? Do you have a website, please?
You can find the book on Amazon, Stealth Invasion, Muslim Conquest, through Immigration and Resettlement Jihad is the full title.
Excellent.
And you can find it on Amazon.
Excellent. Leo Homan from WorldNet Daily, thank you for being with us today. I really much appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, when we come back in the fourth segment, we're going to look at the precautions that churches should take based on this most recent report and alert.
At the American Pastors Network, we urge pastors and Christian parents to seek a Christian education for their children, not as a preference, but a conviction. Whether in homeschool or Christian school, a Christian education is essential if we ever hope to raise godly children and change the culture for Christ. That's why on this program and our Stand in the Gap Today program, we are glad to partner with BJU Press, the nation's largest provider of K-12 Christian curriculum. Academically excellent, biblically sound, and historically accurate. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com. We're going now to wrap up our program today with one final segment. During this portion, I'll be sharing 5 practical steps that church members and pastors can take to prepare themselves for a potential terrorist attack. As we discussed previously, the book of Nehemiah and the Gospels make it clear that arming and protecting God's people, should enemies threaten, is not only wise, but it's also biblical.
As we conclude the program today, ladies and gentlemen, we want to pick up on or continue on this theme that we began last segment with our guest Leo Homan from WorldNet Daily on this recent threat warning just released just yesterday, actually, from Understanding the Threat, that reality. Warning by the FBI and others that Muslim terrorists are actually scoping out churches across the country for terrorist action because they believe it's a soft site and they want to make a statement against Christianity. Now, in that alert, there are five things that are precautions that UTT believes churches should do. I'm going to read them quickly, and then Gary and Dave and I are going to have just a little bit of a discussion on a couple of them, the principles behind them. The first precaution that they are recommending that all churches and pastors and congregants take is this. Number one, understand the real threat that the U.S. Islamic movement poses and educate your flock. In other words, be alert as a church, and the pulpit needs to speak about it. That's what we're trying to do on this program because it is a real issue. Secondly, second precaution is stop conducting interfaith outreaches with the Muslim Brotherhood and Hamas and others in the connected organizations. That interfaith outreach is taking place across the country by Muslim Brotherhood entities in the communities. It's a guise to make it to make them look moderate when in fact they are not. So don't get involved in interfaith outreaches with any kind of Muslim group. Number three, encourage parishioners who are properly trained to carry firearms, if they are, to carry them, and to make sure that it's known publicly. And again, this is a understanding the threat precaution that they are recommending, and they train local and state law enforcement officials. So this is where they're coming from. They're saying, consider posting a sign in the front of the church saying something like, quote, the disciples carried weapons and Jesus was okay with it, so we are too, end quote. They say this would be a tremendous deterrent. And Dave, I want to ask you about that in just a minute. Number four, put together a team of active or former law enforcement officers, military or other trained individuals from the church, within the church, and build a security team. Number five, train the members of your church on how to respond to someone in the church who may be conducting pre-operation surveillance and what to do if an attack happens so that they can be prepared, not scared. Now, those are five precautions put together by a group of law enforcement people who are very concerned about what happens in this country and about the Islamic threat. Now, Gary, let me go to you first. You are a pastor of many, many years. From your experience, are pastors and churches that you know becoming more serious about this issue? Are they encouraging and equipping men in their churches to do what's recommended here? And do you think that such planning is appropriate, or as some might say, to do such kind of planning is really an evidence of a lack of faith? What is the right Christian action to do as a pastor, Gary? What do you say?
Well, first of all, Sam, I do believe that pastors and churches all across this nation are becoming more serious in, you know, training and encouraging people to be equipped for security in the church. If they have not yet started that, if they've not yet become serious, they need to do so, because what we are talking about here is a reality. And not to prepare is to go into any activity that that church might be conducting blindsided, and certainly God does not want us to be blindsided. Leadership has a great responsibility to train the congregation and to train a security team to protect that congregation while it is gathered for their various services. Is it a demonstration of a lack of faith? Of course not. When we study the Word of God, we find that the Lord expects us to take responsibility of these things. And he expects us to be diligent, to watch. How many times does he tell us in the Word of God to be diligent and to watch and to walk circumspectly and so forth? I think that the idea of preparing our congregation, so that our church can be secure is very, very, very urgent. It's very practical. It's very appropriate. I just want to say one brief thing, Sam, and that as it relates to this pre-operation surveillance, I would encourage people not just to walk through their congregation and looking for somebody videoing the services, because I think it's going to be more subtle than that. I'm not the expert like Leo is, but I am a pastor. And I kind of think that, you know, there would be other ways that this pre-operation surveillance would be taking place in the church. I think that every leader must pray for wisdom on behalf of God and insight to be able to detect anything like this that's taking place so that the congregation can be protected.
Well, thank you, Gary. And ladies and gentlemen, we're just trying to put this fact out that this is an alert. It's a real threat. We know it is real. We're trying to let you know that it is real. And even in the preparation precaution here, this does not mean that we are not trusting in God. It does not mean that you are trusting in man or a group of people. No, but as Gary said, part of being a pastor is a shepherding fault. It's a part of protecting. That's what you're talking about, Gary. There's a necessary part.
Right.
Dave, you are an evangelist. You're in churches all over the country. What is your perspective about churches alerting and waking up on that? And what is your sense about their recommendation here from UTT that people carry weapons if they're able to do so? For many people, that's just so anathema that it's hard to get their head around it. Yet, as they said, you know, even put a little sign out there about the disciples carried weapons and Jesus was okay with it, and so do we, as a little bit of an intern. I don't think that was a humorous thing. There may have a humorous side to it. But answer that question, please, if you could, Dave. And then I would like you to close this program in prayer like we generally do, Dave, okay?
Be delighted to. Sam, let me say this. I completely agree with what Gary said. I completely concur with these five suggestions or recommendations coming from Understanding the Threat and John Guandalo and Chris Gabatz. Sam, let me say this. We go to the Bible for the answers to these kind of things. And in the book of Nehemiah, we've referred to this a number of times on this program. Nehemiah says, "We made our supplication to our God when the enemy came against their building of the wall." There's the God part, the trust in the Lord. But he also goes on and says, "And we set a watch." There's the weaponry part. So it is not lack of faith to plan, prepare, and to be armed in the eventuality that something very sinister takes place. Sam, what I am seeing across the United States of America is a growing number of pastors who are like our dear friend Gary Dull. They understand the threat. They love their people. And because they love their people, they have a trained security detail within their church, and they are prepared and trained in the event that something very unfortunate would happen. And I would guess, Sam, somewhere in the neighborhood of the churches that I'm in, probably 70% or more have such a trained security detail. In fact, I'll be candid with you. I recommend it. In fact, I ask when I go into a church, have you planned for this? And most of the churches have. If they have not, I strongly encourage them to do so. It is not a lack of faith. It is absolutely essential considering the days in which we're living.
Good, Dave. Go ahead and pray for us, please. We're just about up in time.
I'll be delighted to. Father, thank you so much for what we've heard today. Thank you for the somber but very needed admonition. Father, I pray the pastors, church leaders, those that sit in the pew would hear what has been said today, and Lord, not move forward in fear, but move forward in faith, but take the adequate precautions as well. Father, bless through the Christmas season. Keep our churches, our church members, and our church leaders safe. I ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
You've been listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, and we're so glad that you've joined us today. As I mentioned earlier, if you like what you're hearing, you can listen to our daily program online by visiting our website at standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. You can listen live daily to the Stand in the Gap Today program from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time right there on the site, or you can look for a station in your area on our station's listings page. Now, we also have a one-minute program called Stand in the Gap Minute, which is a daily reflection on spiritual truths designed to help you in your walk with God. All three programs, Stand in the Gap Minute, Stand in the Gap Today, and Stand in the Gap Weekend, can be found at standinthegapradio.com. Just click on the name of the program you're interested in to access the archives. If you're interested in hearing our minute or daily broadcast in your area, please contact the station manager of your local station and tell him or her about our program. We'd love to reach more listeners just like you. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm excited to see where 2017 will take us. Here at the American Pastors Network, we've had tremendous opportunities this past year, with even more presenting themselves every day, which gives me hope that God is going to do something through us and others who are actively engaged in sharing the gospel and equipping God's people with the tools they need to engage the culture and stand in the gap for truth. Specifically, our network has a goal of establishing state chapters of courageous and obedient pastors in all 50 states. Currently, we have networks in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Missouri, with over a half dozen poised to join us. Now, it takes about $10,000 to launch each chapter, and this is where you can help. Our goal is to unite those of like faith with one voice, impacting the culture on a local, regional, and national level, and this has never been more relevant nor important than today. Our APN state chapters of pastors are proving to be a leading voice for the pulpit and for biblical truth in their various states. Your gift of any amount will go a long way towards helping us accomplish this critical mission. In fact, your gift of just $25 or more, if you send that to us, I'll send to you a CD of a recent sermon I preached entitled, God's Plan for a Blessed Culture. This message is very timely for where we are in this post-election season, and I know that it will be an encouragement to you. Another way that we're trying to reach people is through the development of our own app. The younger generation and even a few of the older ones use a smartphone. With our own app, people will be able to access our radio programs 24/7, and with this technology, people around the world will be able to listen too. As you can imagine, an app like this is not only helpful, but increasingly necessary in reaching our culture. Will you consider giving toward this endeavor to communicate more easily to millions of more Christians here and around the world? Again, for your gift of just $25 or more, I'll send to you a CD of a recent sermon that I preached entitled, God's Plan for a Blessed Culture. It's our way of saying thanks to you. To give, now you can call us at 610-901-3607. That's 610-901-3607. Or you can go to standinthegapradio.com and press the donate button. To write out a check, make it out to APN and send your gift to American Pastors Network, 83 West Main Street, Suite 3, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. That's the American Pastors Network, 83 West Main Street, Suite 3, Elverson, Pennsylvania, 19520. You know, America is at a crossroads. God has given us a reprieve, but unless the pulpit stand up, there'll be no help or hope for America. God's people hold the key, and the pulpits of America must lead the way. Help us at the American Pastors Network to stand in the gap for truth now. We hope to hear from you this week. And until next time, would you stand in the gap for truth wherever you are?
Thank you for listening to Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network Week in Review. Our goal is to equip the pastor, church leader, and all believers to think critically and biblically in a culture that increasingly rejects truth, and to provide you with a focused analysis of current events viewed through the lens of a biblical and constitutional worldview. APN promotes the return of our nation to God through preaching, praying, and equipping Christians to reclaim the culture as soldiers and ambassadors of Christ. God hears the calls of His people who learn the truth and obey it. To partner with APN, please visit us on the web at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. You can sign up to receive regular updates, to become a prayer partner, or to help as a financial partner. You may also call us at 610-901-3607. Again, that's 610-901-3607. To listen to any of our Stand in the Gap programs, including our live daily program, go to standinthegapradio.com. That's standinthegapradio.com. Thank you for listening today, and be sure to tune in next week at this same time for Stand in the Gap Weekend, the American Pastors Network. Pastors preaching the truth, equipping their people to impact the culture for Christ.